passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome back, everybody. It is John Pollock. It is a special bonus edition of Post Pro Res, two shows a week apart. Myself and WH Park, after all this time away, here we are coming back together on a Sunday night. WH, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm good, John. A little bit tired, a bit of a long day, but you know, what kept me going was that I was going to see you again in just less than 2 weeks' time and talk about some important news.
Yes. Well, we thought we would do this emergency bonus show this weekend with the passing of Antonio Inoki, which the news came down Friday night our time in North America, Saturday in Japan. And it's just it's one of those WH that certainly that does not come out of left field. We know that Inoki had been in poor health, but, you know, coming like such a just a massive figure, and that's just putting it mildly. That's just one of those, just so much history that you can talk about when it comes to Antonio Inoki. Like, among, you know, the pillars of this industry, I mean, many would assign a spot for Antonio Inoki.
I mean, even more than that, within Japan itself, he is such a cultural icon. Like, if you see a figure, like some kind of, whether it's cartoon or statue or something, and it has a massive chin and a red scarf, you probably know it's representing Antonio Inoki, because that was his trademark look, the red scarf, his prominent chin, and his, you know, his countdown, you know, Ichi Nisan, da, you know, everyone knew that. Like, if you never ever saw him wrestle, you'd still know who Antonio Inoki was.
Yeah, and that's what I was, you know, I can only tell from, like, you know, secondhand from people that have lived in the country, like the enormous impact. You obviously have that firsthand experience of Antonio Inoki that crossed so many generations and certainly went beyond just a professional wrestling figure and to one of pop culture there.
I mean, like, his image is an IP in of itself, to the point where I believe, like, a company, he lost the rights to his own likeness to, like, a pachinko company who could just we just make pachinko machines with his likeness on it, and he had no say over it. Or I remember reading that somewhere, and I was just like, that's incredible. But it goes to show like also his it's an example of what he was like as a businessman, and you know, like just the craziness that surrounds him as a promoter of not only wrestling but of himself as well.
Right. Yeah, and I think that like that is one that, you know, in the wake of his death is that, you know, so much of his history is tied to Giant Baba. I mean, right down to, you know, the two that were among the successors to Ricky Dozan, but you had one that I would assume many would equate like a Giant Baba to closer to like a Sam Mushnick figure, while Antonio Inoki is much more in your Vince McMahon type of reputation, I think, among people.
Oh, definitely. When you look at, you know, like Giant Baba was, you know, like was known to kind of like squash like scandals and try to prevent scandals from happening, especially with wrestlers who work for him. Whereas Antonio Inoki was usually the source of a lot of scandals and things that he would do within not only, you know, New Japan Pro Wrestling, which he helped found, but also in politics. Like he would become a member of the Japanese Diet, and you know, like, and controversy followed him in both the world of wrestling and in the world of politics. But you know, the thing is regardless of that, and usually scandals can be a real, you know, career killer in Japan, but not for him. Like he maintained his popularity, and so many people just, you know, they just loved him regardless, because he had that, you know, image of like he represented Japan in the world of wrestling in a time when, carrying on from that tradition of Riki Dozan post-war, where he's like, fending off all these, you know, foreign invader wrestlers that are coming in, but he's showing the strength of Japan. Inoki really took that to a different level with, you know, going into wrestling and fighting people from outside of wrestling, legitimate combat athletes. And, you know, and of course, a lot of those were worked and a lot of his victories were worked, but it didn't matter at the time. People believed it. And it added to his aura, and just he was an inspiring figure to a lot of people in Japan for the generation of the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, and I think like that is such a key part was the promotional side that he was behind with the formation of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And here was someone just to kind of take people through a timeline. I mean, he spends a lot of his formative years, like growing up in Brazil. He goes there as a teenager and then comes back, working under Ricky Dozan as part of the JWA, and makes his debut in 1960, the same day as Giant Baba and Kentaro Oki as well, who was Inoki's first opponent. And it's through the JWA that he temporarily leaves in 1966 to Tokyo Pro Wrestling and comes back to the JWA after that group folds, and this is after Ricky Dozan's death, where, you know, business did go down significantly, but it has a big resurgence in the late 60s. And then we see his exodus from the JWA, where he is allegedly fired from the company. And in the wake of that is New Japan. And then months later, All Japan Pro Wrestling also growing. And thus we have kind of the two that were attached at the hip by one another, of Inoki and Baba, now on separate sides. And that was largely like your industry for the next several decades of, you know, your two major groups that would be in competition with each other pretty much, with, you know, the odd working relationship at certain very, very rare times in those next couple of decades.
Yeah, with Baba and with Inoki, you pretty much have from 1972 until about 2000, you have these two companies, All Japan and New Japan, respectively, dominating business in Japan and being immensely influential to, you know, wrestling styles in North America, to wrestling styles in Mexico as well, to some extent, and even into Europe, because both companies, you know, are bringing in wrestlers from other countries. They are want them to bring their style to New Japan and All Japan, but also they want them to take something from their companies and take it to other parts of the world. I mean, as well as like, you know, just for New Japan, well, I guess we'll focus more on New Japan because that was Inoki's company. Like he's the one who starts this idea of, you know, going from pro wrestling and adding elements of like, I want this image of pro wrestlers to be the strongest fighters in the world. So he took that very, very seriously. Like it's part of like this kind of philosophy of Inokiism that really kind of galvanizes itself in the 2000s with like, you know, with the, you know, the whole idea of like actually putting New Japan pro wrestlers in rings with legitimate street fighters with little to no preparation or training. And it backfires on him, unfortunately, and on New Japan. But he has this
philosophy. Genesis is like it builds the company. Like that's, you know, it was something like of a time and place. And, you know, to the counter that, you know, All Japan was the one with the NWA hookup. They could bring in all of these foreigners. Inoki had to be a lot more creative and pretty much create these dynamics and these stories. And he being like the ultimate defender of professional wrestling to all of these outside combat sports and, you know, had to be a lot more creative, I think, than All Japan that had such a steady pipeline of big national US stars to come in and just, you know, cycle through them.
Also with All Japan, it is more of a traditional pro wrestling company in terms of its style inside the ring. But whereas New Japan developed the idea of strong style, which is, you know, very, you know, mercurial, you know, kind of philosophy. Like it's, I understand what, when New Japan say we do, you know, it's strong style. I understand what it means. It's hard for me to articulate it, but it is based on like, you know, having legit backgrounds or using legitimate shoot fighting techniques at the time, because Inoki's own background was in like, you know, judo and karate and like real martial arts. And then he got into professional wrestling via Riki Dozan. And there is a difference if you look stylistically at kind of New Japan, All Japan style, but it's really interesting. This philosophy of like how people are trained in the New Japan Dojo to this, even to this day, is very much, you know, comes from the philosophy that Inoki established early on in the history of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I would imagine that his photo, his portrait is still prominent, you know, in the dojo itself.
It's interesting that you look back at history and you always, you know, associate, you know, Inoki with New Japan and Baba with All Japan, but it also brings about like had one of them for whatever reason did not have that ambition to launch their own company. If they could have somehow coexisted in JWA, like it was the greatest thing for the industry that you had these two giants go their separate ways and not be able to work together, where there would have been a number one and number two. If there had been that delineation, like, and I just think like the industry was healthier because of the fact that these two could not work together and went off and created their own companies.
And with Inoki, like he just, you know, he developed, you know, two of the biggest stars under his direct tutelage, which would be, you know, Tatsumi Fujinami and Riki Choshu. And then with Baba, it was, you know, Junbo Tsuruta and Tenryu. And then when Choshu jumps ship from New Japan to All Japan, like it creates a renaissance of business, this massive business boom for him. And then when he jumps back to New Japan, again, he brings this massive business with him because the fans are like so excited to see this guy who was a New Japan guy wrestling All Japan. Then he wrestled in All Japan. He came back to New Japan. So he created all these fresh matchups. And Inoki, you know, it was like really much like Choshu represented strong style going against the Royal Road, King's Road style of All Japan. And so you have like this idea like Choshu is representing Inoki and against, you know, like Jumbo Tsuruta and Tenryu. It was really fascinating. But, and then the whole idea of like, you know, junior heavyweight wrestling really gets its major platform in New Japan with Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid. And he provided a platform there. And the idea like Satoru Sayama is very much as a, you know, junior heavyweight wrestler, but in the vein of, you know, Inoki's strong style image.
And New Japan, of course, their very first card at Oda Ward Gymnasium, which is where typically the anniversary card still happens every year to this date. It's Inoki and Carl Gotch that headline that first show with Carl Gotch winning and then having a rematch months later with Inoki winning by count out against Carl Gotch. And Carl Gotch becomes, you know, just such a such a hugely influential figure within New Japan as their trainer, and somebody that from show number one is very much presented as their major foreigner.
Oh yeah. I mean, people like Carl Gotch, and I think to a degree, even like Bill Robinson, are, you know, like these are guys who epitomize kind of, you know, Americans or European stars who, you know, bring that strong style, that element to New Japan and differentiate it from, you know, All Japan, which was like more in line with like the Funk Brothers and Stan Hansen and wrestlers like that. But if you look at like some of the stars that really emerged out of New Japan in the late '80s, the big one would be Big Van Vader. Mm-hmm. And he develops, that gimmick is developed for him in New Japan. And then Leon White is given that gimmick, and he goes from like this kind of nondescript guy that was in the AWA to becoming like this monster who's like allowed to like, okay, just go beat people up. And he becomes a star because he beat Inoki in, I forget the time limit, but he beat him like right away.
It was like about 3 minutes.
And Sumo Hall goes crazy about, you know, because of this result. And there's like riots and people are like freaking out. It's like, that's the level of like popularity and influence that Inoki had, that like he said, this guy's going to beat me. I'm going to make an instant star, and we're going to create like this, you know, all these headlines. And then the rematches are going to be big business. And then matches he's going to have with Fujinami and Choshu afterwards. He was not afraid to like lose, John, to put other people over him, because he knew that that was going to create money down the line.
Yeah. And it seemed to be that was also something that, you know, in those formative years for New Japan, and you were bringing in all the different, you know, Willem Ruska, and of course the famous one with Muhammad Ali, and there would be many others, Willie Williams, Leon Spinks, but you were building like the legend of Antonio Inoki and, you know, feeding him to these guys. And it did seem like he got to a point where he realized that, you know, he could make some of these people. And the Vader one is a perfect example. The very first Tokyo Dome, he loses to the Russian,
Salman Hashimoto.
Yes, that was it. And so you had like these instances, you know, where he would understand for the good of business, like beating Inoki, like you could make a star in one night.
He made stars out of, you know, Choshu and Fujinami, but also with the Three Musketeers. He made stars out of, you know, the great Muda, Keiji Muto, and Shin Hashimoto, and Masahiro Chono. Like Chono, I think a little less so, but definitely Muto and Hashimoto benefited from having a rivalry to a degree with Inoki in his like later years.
How much of the coverage have you seen over the weekend? Because this has been covered like a lot of mainstream outlets, and not just in Japan, but also throughout North America. I would think a lot of that does rely on the Muhammad Ali fight from 1976.
Oh, definitely. I think especially here, but in, you know, a little bit of it in Japan, but like a lot of that would be like looking at his life in general and like his influence in the business of professional wrestling in that country. And what a cultural icon he is, and a pop culture, you know, like figure, like, you know, you name it, John. Action figures, T-shirts, bed sheets. I'm sure the whole kit and caboodle. His image is probably on anything you can think of that can be merchandised. His face is on it.
What does the Muhammad Ali fight to the average person in Japan? Would that be, you know, a fight that is that well known to the public? I guess like of our generation.
Of our generation, I would say less so. I think it's more his overall wrestling career that mm-hmm. is what he's most famous for. Of course, you know, it's part of it. Oh, he fought the most famous boxer in the history of that sport in Muhammad Ali. But I think, you know, once people actually take a look at that fight, it will not live up to any kind of hype you might have imagined in your own head.
Have you ever watched the whole thing?
I've never watched the whole thing, John. I think I got like 10 minutes in and I was just like, okay, I can't watch this. This is really boring. And it's not even you can't even watch it on a curiosity level. It's like, how long is he going to, you know, just, you know, lie on his back and start kicking away at Ali's leg? Right? It becomes very, very boring after a point. And I've never had the morbid curiosity of like just keeping going through it. It's like the island death match he has with Masa Saito, which is like 2.5 hours long. I've tried like, okay, but again, like there's a lot of nothing. They're just following each other on this island. It's pretty boring. If you actually can get through the entire island death match he has with Masa Saito, you are a much more patient person than I am.
Like there was like this certain spectacle that he understood of the idea of that this might not be pretty, this might not be aesthetically pleasing, but there would be that certain like shock factor that you just want to see how this turns out. Like Antonio Inoki fighting, you know, Willem Ruska or Alan Coage or an island death match. It was just like that side of the promotional end. I think that was his curveball as a promoter in his heyday. Unfortunately, as time evolved, I don't think he did with that mindset, and it became such an Achilles heel for him in the latter stage of his, you know, promotional career that, you know, is going to separate people's opinions of the good and the bad from Antonio Inoki if you only lived through one of those generations and not all of them.
Oh, definitely. For me, like as someone who's you know, fandom in professional wrestling with New Japan is kind of peaking in the 2000s, he becomes a very negative figure to me because his philosophy of like, he's trying to prove something. But it's not him in the ring against, you know, like Mirko Krokop or Anderson Silva or Vanderlei Silva, you know, whoever's like fighting in Pride. It's Yuji Nagata. It's all these other people who are, you know, like to the detriment of their careers, you know, like in their box office appeal is like, okay, we're not going to be we can't actually beat these guys. So we're not the strongest fighters around. And a lot of people lose so much aura. I think the biggest victim of this philosophy though was Shinya Hashimoto in the feud he had with Naoya Ogawa. And like you went from this guy who's like the, you know, pillar in New Japan. He's like the top star there. It's top box office draw. And then because Naoya Ogawa double crosses him with, you know, seemingly with the support of Antonio Inoki, it destroys his box office appeal and it brings down New Japan business. And I don't think Hashimoto ever fully recovers from those incidents because he loses to him multiple times. And it's just like, you think, well, who's promoting this? It's Inoki. It's like, why are you letting this guy get away with doing this to Hashimoto? This makes no business sense at all. But it goes to what he believes at the time is like, if Hashimoto can't stay in the ring with this legit, fighter, like I don't want anything to do with him. And disregarding the whole, kind of foundations of what pro wrestling should actually be.
Yeah, I mean, the other one that comes to mind for me was Yuji Nagata just being thrown into those fights, first with Mirko Krokop and then with Fedor Emelianenko, which just sound insane to any, like, you know, and Nagata was certainly somebody with like a very, very strong wrestling pedigree, but you're talking 10 years removed from any kind of active competition for him. And, you know, he still went on to have a very nice career, and that's putting it mildly, but I think it definitely impacted him, especially in 01 with that Krokop loss. And it sort of, you know, it was this risk factor that, you know, most of them came back harmed by it. I would say like Nakamura was one that like skated by, because he was able to show enough with Daniel Gracie and it propped them up a bit. But for most, like it did a lot of harm for them. And it was also a public that could discern between professional wrestling and what they were watching with Pride, with K1 at the time. They knew the differences. And I think it was New Japan that was sort of not leaning into the positives that you can have with professional wrestling, with booking, with protecting stars, and doing what mixed martial arts could not at the time.
Yeah, it's not until really the advent of, you know, like Ghetto getting the book and Tanahashi, you know, becoming the top star. And then like really going back to what professional wrestling actually is and kind of dismissing the elements of like Inokiism from the company that it starts its road to recovery and hits its peak in like, you know, 2017, 2018, you know, and that's because like, you know, they kind of like, okay, he's the founder of the company, but we're going to like kind of ignore him and just kind of promote this idea that we're actually a professional wrestling company. And, you know, I don't think there's, you know, like the only kind of like trace of Enochism in terms of like wrestling styles that existed in that 2016 to 2019 period is Katsuyori Shibata, you know? And I think probably for the best for business. And, but Enoki, like, you know, he goes to farm Enoki Genome Federation, you know, with, you know, like very minimal success, I feel. But his influence is still felt in professional wrestling, you know, even up until, you know, like maybe the last 2 years of his life.
Yeah. And I mean, we were talking, me and Wei, on Friday, being there for that New Year's Dash card where it was the Liger retirement ceremony. And when the video of Enoki came up, like it was like, there was a gasp of this audience that, you know, Antonio Enoki for pretty much the post, you know, once Yuke's buys the company and then Bushiroad, like Antonio Enoki is sort of just this, I won't say a cloud that hangs over New Japan, but it's just like this part of New Japan's history that everyone knows is there, but it's not really recognized. And just to have him on screen, number one, it told you probably the state of his health that he was not there in person, but just having Enoki on screen at a New Japan event, it just seemed like to that audience, like that was something they could not fathom in 2020 that could occur.
Yeah. I felt it was a nice surprise for us in the audience. Like I felt that way. I was like, oh my God, it's Antonio Enoki on the TV screen. You're saying like, you know, to pay tribute to Liger in his retirement. But yeah, I think most people there were really happy to see that video. And especially because I think it probably meant a lot to Jushin Liger to like have like this legendary figure, you know, pay tribute to him on the night of his retirement. But he still meant a lot to long-term fans of the company who stuck through it and would be like, you know, okay, so there's that really unfortunate period, you know, 5-6 year period in the early 2000s, but hey, that's done. This company is really healthy now. Let's appreciate if he does make appearances, let's appreciate that he did create the company, that he did set the foundations for what is strong style and what is the New Japan Pro Wrestling philosophy.
Yeah. And I mean, that seemed to be something that they were at least hinting towards, like the idea of an Enoki in-person appearance at some point during this 50th anniversary year that you could see clearly, like that Okada was publicly pushing for. And whether it was a result of his health, whether there were still lingering politics with the idea of Enoki making an appearance at a New Japan show, unfortunately, it never happened.
No, and with Okada, you can tell like his current like image, the way, you know, especially his ring robe, his entrance robe is very much an homage to Antonio Enoki, because that's kind of the style of, you know, like that Enoki would wear or Giant Baba would wear, but more so like Enoki. And I think it's a nice tribute that he does in the year, in the 50th anniversary year of New Japan, that he's like, you know, I'm the biggest star right now. I'm going to pay tribute somehow to the biggest star of, you know, the founding years.
I think Okada, the idea of, you know, really this has been in Ghetto's model of like his, like this generation's Enoki. The idea of Okada winning the IWGP title now at the Tokyo Dome and ending the show with a Ishii Nisanda, like I could very well see that being the end moment for the Tokyo Dome next year.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. You know, I'm curious to watch, you know, like Wrestle Kingdom, just to see like how he closes the show, if he pays tribute to Enoki now. With that idea,
I feel that like it with his passing, I think it'll be a very big embrace now of Enoki and the history that he had with this company, which I mean that was not a history they focused on too much over these last, you know, 15 years.
No, and it's and all the footage of his matches, you know, are readily available. You know, like right there, you can get it. You know, they have access to put up whatever is not on New Japan World now. They can get it up really quickly and just start. I imagine that they're something that they're working on over there is like putting together a playlist of like his best matches or his most memorable matches, you know, the stuff with Vader, with Tatsumi Fujinami, with Riki Choshu, tons of people, you know, like, you know, his tag team with Seiji Sakaguchi. There's so much out there and there's, you know, like I would not say like I'm the biggest, you know, Antonio Enoki wrestler fan out there, like, you know, it's kind of before my time, like his style, But there's some stuff he does like really engaging, you know, like I actually just watched this like 2 out of 3 falls match with he has with Jack Briscoe, and for the most part I'm like, you know, it's a little tedious for me, but like just the way the intensity him and Briscoe have in locking up and just trying to apply holds with one another is really fascinating to watch aspects of that. Though like if you're like me and you're not really a huge fan of 70s wrestling, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it watching the whole thing.
He is very much like the time and place of, you know, some of those, some of like the work fights as well. Are those any of those kinds of fights, fights in quotation marks, ones that like, does that even appeal to you? Like that novelty, the curiosity of Inoki in some of these fights?
No. Professional wrestlers being in legit fights with, you know, like boxers or, you know, judokas or karate champions has no interest for me because I don't watch professional wrestling for that. I watch professional wrestling because it is professional wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't watch, you know, I watch kung fu movies because there's a certain appeal to a kung fu movie versus like a regular action movie for me. And it's kind of like the same with, you know, professional wrestling. If you said to me tomorrow, John, like, let's put Randy Orton against who's the guy from the British boxer, Tyson Fury, I have no interest in that. No interest whatsoever.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Now, when it comes to some of the scandals in his career, you know, there was a big embezzlement scandal in 1983. Hisashi Shinma has to step down as booker and chairman of the board, and Inoki loses his president's title at the time. Just in terms of the culture, is it stunning to you that he has survived some of these scandals and the just the negative image that came with it? Because for the most part, I mean, he was Teflon throughout a lot of his career. He did have, you know, later there was a scandal about 10 years later that, I mean, he wasn't reelected to the Japanese Diet in 1995, but I mean, he went through a lot that did not ultimately, like, he is celebrated as a hero today. He is not, these scandals to me did not have such a negative impact on his legacy for most.
Well, I mean, he also, you know, in 89, he did the trip to Iraq.
Yes.
The first Gulf War, and he, you know, he negotiated the release of Japanese hostages, and that garnered him a lot of goodwill. You know, he got these Japanese citizens out of Iraq before the first Gulf War starts, and thus, you know, basically you can I think definitively say he's probably saved their lives. So,
again, just to go to the scandal of a few years later, and like one of the accusations was that like he didn't have it was like he was in the right place at the right time, and did he take credit for something that he didn't have direct involvement in? Like, that's the difficult part with Inoki is like separating the fact from the fiction at times as well, because this guy was like the greatest author of his own story.
Well, I'm going to say the myth of that, you know, the negotiation probably lives on much, you know, more clearly than the scandal of like, did he actually do anything, you know? So
I want to read this from the July 12th, 1993 edition of The Observer, and I'll keep this short, but this is right as this, this latest scandal is breaking from Dave Meltzer. After a 3-decade-long run as one of the most popular sports personalities in his country, it appears the final story of Antonio Inoki is about to go down in disgrace. After the business breakup of Inoki and longtime business manager Hisashi Shinma and the firing by Inoki of a political press secretary and confidant who was close to Shinma, the secretary went public in a major magazine with an 8-part story specifying allegations of illegal activities and misuse of funds by Inoki. Inoki, the second most famous wrestler ever in Japan, and no doubt on a worldwide basis, the second most famous wrestler in the world in the 70s, was voted into the Japanese Diet in 1989, which signaled the end of his career as a full-time pro wrestler. There are 2 years remaining on the term. The story grew even bigger this past week when Inoki broke his silence holding a press conference, which was carried live on all 4 Japanese television networks. So think about that for a second. He calls a press conference and all 4 networks carry it live. During the press conference, Inoki once again tried to do the carny wrestling angle of blaming his accusers and denying across the board every accusation without offering any evidence or substance for his claims. Inoki claimed everything written in the media about him was false and refused to resign from office, which political writers in the major newspapers had been suggested and demanding as the stories by his former secretary continued to break. Now we go on here. There was one part here. Even though Inoki's past was hardly pristine, he was always able to manipulate things to keep himself as a national hero after past indiscretions. However, at this point, Inoki's reputation has gone up in smoke and is thought of by the public as the ultimate dirty politician, like Richard Nixon of 2 decades ago, rather than a sports hero. Inoki even brought religion into it, claiming his decision to fire Shinma was because he received word from God that after 26 years, he and Shinma had to go their separate ways and brought up God's will.
Well, you know, obviously a huge influence on Miro, you know, that we're now just discovering, you know. Again, like, I would say the general public, John, didn't care. Like, honestly, like, politics is such a sham in Japan. It's not even funny that, like, okay, this happened or that happened. Okay, but he's still Antonio Inoki. We don't care. Like, we might not think much of him as a politician, but we still think a lot of him as like a sports hero. And at the end of the day, most television stations aren't going to focus on those things, John. You know, what they're going to focus on, they're going to show clips of his matches. They're going to show clips of him fighting Ali, you know, just enough to make it still seem like it was interesting. And they're going to focus on the fact that he, you know, after the death of Ricky Dozan, he became the top wrestler in Japan. Like, Baba wasn't really gonna do that in the 70s. He's because of his physical condition and stuff like that. But Inoki was able to remain a top wrestling star in ring up until like his retirement in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, the retirement match they ends up having with Don Fry, it's a very short match, but they do a $7 million gate at the Tokyo Dome. It's like $2.5 million or so in merchandise sales. It's like, it's an extraordinary event for his retirement, which is, you know, it's taken as gospel at the time, like of a wrestling retirement by Antonio Inoki in 1998, but one that, you know, it was, you know, it just showed you the amount of people that showed up for this. Muhammad Ali came over for the retirement as well. And, you know, Inoki and Muhammad Ali, like, to me, that will always be the link to the mainstream world of Antonio Inoki's link to professional pop culture.
And there's a massive lineup, John, to get slapped by him, you know, so he can transfer his fighting spirit to them. People got in line for this, like waited 20 minutes to get slapped in the ring by Antonio Inoki, including some like stalwarts in wrestling and like celebrities and stuff like that. It's unbelievable.
When it comes to matches that stand out for you involving Inoki, do you go to the Vader matches, Fujinami? I mean, what would be on your short list of matches that you would recommend of people that maybe just want to get a sense of Antonio Inoki, that know the name, have read the stories, but have seen very little of his actual in-ring?
I would say anything he did, almost anything he did with Masa Saito. They had a very intense feud. There's one where like they're handcuffed together, And Inoki wins just essentially beating him with punches. Like, it's pretty brutal. Like, That's kind of on the one extreme end, but I would say
there's the Great Antonio match that has just had a life of its own where, you know, Great Antonio is just not selling for him and Inoki just beats the hell out of this guy. And that became a very popular video several years ago once, you know, it started just circulating on YouTube. And I think, I can't remember what comedy show it was that like played clips of it. And it just had this whole revival, this video that became very synonymous with him.
It's very easily accessible if you want to see this, you know, match he has with Great Antonio. But I'd say the three that would be really great to watch, like any his rivalries with Fujinami, Choshu, and Vader, but also the Tenryu match where Tenryu beats him is a fun match because it's you know, one of Baba's, you know, students, apprentices taking on Antonio Inoki. So he's you know, Tenryu's kind of, you can make an argument like is a proxy for Baba taking on Tenryu. But I mean, Tenryu's such a great wrestler. Like him and Inoki have a very fun match, and I would recommend that for sure.
I don't know if the footage is easily accessible, but one of the big angles they did was involving Tigerjeet Singh, where Tigerjeet Singh attacks him outside of a shopping mall. And they played this, and that just got Tigerjeet Singh off and running with Antonio Inoki. In terms of influence, and I would say that certainly when you look at his impact of those he influenced, I put Hulk Hogan up there pretty significantly of, you know, for when Hogan was, you know, with the AWA and traveling to New Japan and working underneath Inoki. I think like seeing Antonio Inoki up close in person and the aura that he possessed, I think that helped Hogan greatly when, you know, he goes to the WWF and, you know, he's never been shy about noting like Antonio Inoki as someone that, you know, he held in very high regard and they were, you know, major, that was a major program in 83, 84.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably, you know, Inoki is probably one of the few people that, you know, Hulk Hogan would be like, you know, not like you're saying, John, he wasn't shy about like saying how much he helped him, but like, you know, Inoki put him over in Japan and helped make him an international star in that country. And I think that definitely helps him later on when he goes from the AWA to the WWF. And like, you know, like I saw a picture that surfaced of Inoki at Hulk Hogan's wedding. And it's like this group photo, like he's the center of that photo. It's amazing. And like Andre the Giant is off to the side. Hogan and Linda are like, you know, just right, you know, off to the side. But the focus of this picture at Hulk Hogan's wedding, you would think Hulk Hogan would be the center of every photo at his own wedding, but it's not. This one picture with Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan in it, it's Antonio Inoki dead set in the middle of this picture. And I think that tells you all you need to know about like how much Hogan probably was happy that Inoki was at his wedding.
Yeah. I mean, a big impact on him. I'm sure someone that, you know, Vince McMahon learned from as well, like being in business together when they had the alliance with the WWF and New Japan Pro Wrestling as well. And as we kind of like wind down, the discussion here, when you were living over there and you were there, two stints that you had living in Japan, tell me a bit about just where kind of Antonio Inoki was at that point in his career. And was it largely just resigned to kind of the mixed martial arts side of things? Was it just the tail end of his New Japan chapter? Where was it?
My first stint was 2000. And this is, you know, basically, you know, the kind of the tail end of his involvement with New Japan. It's, you know, like where business is starting to go down because of the stuff with Pride.
Pride's really taking off that year and the next.
Yeah. But he, you know, him doing these like Inoki Bombaye shows are keeping his name out there. Like these are massive shows that he's part of.
Yeah. Which
these shows.
He does the first one in 2000 and then like, that turns into a major thing when Pride and K1 start to run. The big one was 2003, where you had three shows going on with Inoki show that had Fedor on it. And there was, you know, an enormous, you know, fallout from that had implications. And then you had Pride and K1 all going at it. That was the year of Aki Bono and Bob Sapp. And suddenly, like, that became the night for professional wrestling and mainly, though, mixed martial arts and kickboxing.
And then I'd say from, you know, my second stint, which would be the major one, which is almost 10 years from 2011, is like, he's there. You don't really associate him with, either combat sports really or professional wrestling, but he's there. It's Antonio Inoki.
He's making trips to North Korea.
But he's still showing up on variety shows. There's talk about him. He's a trivia question, you know, on talk shows and things like that. And like I said, his IP is all over the place still. Pachinko, if you know anything about Japan and the popularity of Pachinko, you know, like his, like, I remember, like, I'd say 2015, 2016, like one of the big news stories was like, oh, they're going to come out with a new pachinko machine that has Antonio Inoki's likeness on it. And it's going to be huge, you know, super popular all across Japan. And I was like, wow, he still garners that kind of, publicity. Just his image, John. It's not even him. It's just his image.
Do you see that in Japan, historical figures like Antonio Inoki hold that placement more so than you see, you know, contemporaries in North America? Do you see it similar?
I would say in North America, like Hulk Hogan would probably be the closest you would get to Inoki level, like popularity, penetration into mainstream culture that Inoki had in Japan. But I think people like Inoki, people like Giant Baba, even someone like Stan Hansen has a wider range of cultural penetration that most professional wrestlers have in this day and age. Like The Rock would be one of the examples I would cite in North America, but that's, I think, mainly because of his movie career and less because of his wrestling career now. So, Inoki, very, very unique man. And him and Giant Baba are just legends in Japan, like beyond being wrestlers or wrestling promoters. They're just Giant Baba. Oh, Antonio Inoki, Antonio Inoki's chin, his red scarf, Ichi Ni San Da, those resonate throughout, popular culture, throughout mainstream society in Japan. And I don't think you'll see that disappear anytime soon.
Well, I think we will wrap things up there. It's just such a fascinating individual that you can go in so many different directions to talk about their influence in all these different areas, from professional wrestling to mixed martial arts, and good and bad. I think that's one thing with Antonio Inoki. You cannot just paint it with a brush and look at him all in positives. Like there were a lot of negatives attached to him. There were scandals attached to him, but the totality, I think that he will be a figure that I can't imagine, like, there would be another figure like this that we'll see in this industry to have this amount of influence and this level of notoriety in so many different areas. It just doesn't seem like the industry could even, produce a figure like this again. It's, it's the end of a major era.
Well, I mean, he was lucky that he helped kickstart the growth of the industry in the 70s with Giant Baba, by forming the two biggest, helping form one of the two biggest companies in the country and being part of it for more than a decade. And, I think people who are wrestling fans will always have a fondness for that he started New Japan, that he's synonymous with that company. And like all the negative stuff will be there, but it'll be, the thing that people will remember is that, hey, he started New Japan Pro Wrestling. His picture is featured prominently in the dojo. At least it used to be. I'm not sure if it still is, but it wouldn't surprise me if like there's a picture of the dojo that they show these days. And it's like there's his portrait right there. And I think, that he is the embodiment of strong style, whatever that might mean. But he's the embodiment of it. And you can't take that away from him, especially now that he's passed away. I don't think there's going to be too much negative publicity about him coming out, unless there's something, some deep dark secret that we don't know about, but hopefully not. But yeah, his legend will live on as like one of the greatest sports figures and celebrities in the history of Japan.
Yeah. And I would imagine like some kind of ceremony or something next week when they have the Sumo Hall show. You would think like they do something, you know, notable. I know that they did do something before the Royal Quest show over the weekend, but once they're back in Japan for their next Sumo Hall show next Monday, I'm sure that Antonio Inoki will be a big focused upon figure. Also want to let people know that this weekend you got a double dose of WH Park, because the newest edition of the Long and Winding Road, Royal Road, is out. And what are you chatting about this month?
So I got Gareth Hodgson, who's the creator of the Grapple app and is one of the people behind the Grapple Patreon, to come on. And he picked the British Bulldogs taking on Joe and Dean Malenko. And John, I don't know if you've listened to it yet, but like I go into the vests worn by the Bulldogs.
Yes.
You know, that I'm pretty sure probably hand me downs from Bret Hart. and the amazing sweaters of the Malenko brothers that I'm sure were gifts to them from Boris during the last Malenko Christmas dinner.
Well, check that out. It's on the free feed at postwrestling.com. It's the British Bulldogs against Joe and Dean Malenko from January of 1989. And this was great to do, WH, 2 weeks in a row. And yeah. Next time we get together, I'm sure we will talk a bit about the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix that wrapped up this weekend. There's a great rundown of not just the finals, but a whole report card of each performer from the great Karen Peterson up on the site. So you can get a whole rundown of Saturday's pay-per-view.
When I started reading that, I was like, okay, this is going to take longer than I expected. So I just went and got like a drink and just took my time reading her very detailed and thorough report. And the great thing about these things is, you know what? The thing about Karen's reports is they're not dry, because she adds so much of her personality into these reports. So it's a fun read. You get her opinions and her kind of like nuances of her character in these reports. So definitely check it out if you're a Joshi fan, if you're a Stardom fan, you want to know what this 5-Star Grand Prix final was like and like the backstory of a lot of these kind of like matches. Check out her report there, and also her latest edition of Dream Slam Weekly.
Definitely come, highly recommended from WH Park and myself. So that will wrap up our special bonus edition of Post Pro Res, and thanks to everybody for tuning in.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.